Welcome back to Binary Jazz. I thought about doing that in slow motion. I thought about going like...
Don't we alternate?
Probably, but you picked a topic, so I figured I'd do the intros.
This is why I can't keep track, because we don't actually alternate. I don't believe you. Go for it.
Would you like to do an intro, Gary? You can do the intro.
Not particularly, no. No. I don't like doing what I plan for him. I don't like doing what I don't plan for him. But I did plan for it this time, thinking, well, I skipped last week, so it must be my turn.
Well, you know, we did skip a week last week, so technically. Really, it's just me being arbitrary. That's
It depends on how much energy Chris has,
Yeah, that's really the determining factor. Anyway, this is a podcast about things wherein someone comes up with a topic, usually Allison, but this week it's going to be Gary, and the rest of us try to figure out what that topic is without knowing the topic in advance, and we try to have a conversation about it, but probably we just talk about other shit. And we do it every week, or, you know, most weeks.
And we do it every week. We happen to record it.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Right. Yeah. We record it.
Yeah.
We don't have these conversations without recording it. That would be weird.
No, we do. It's just called Slack.
Well, okay.
We have conversations all the
time.
That's
fair. That's, yeah. And about a topic that we don't know anything about. That's fair.
So much of the world. I'm sorry. I interrupted the intro. Were you done with the intro? Have we covered
intros? I mean, you can add to the intro if you think that it was missing something.
I wasn't actually paying attention to it. You start talking intro and like I just...
That's Chris. Chris, Gary, Allison. That's all you need to know.
That's the part that I missed.
That's the part that was missing.
My subconscious tunes into and I'm like, okay, now we can start. All right. Yeah, today's topic is Emir.
Emir.
Y-M-I-R.
Oh, isn't that like a Norse god or like a Nordic?
I can't tell if Gary's disappointed or excited.
Devastated, honestly. Yeah, a bit disappointed because it doesn't seem like the name of a Norse god. It seems like some kind of other word to me, but.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know about mythology. I kind of do this a lot.
But I felt like this one was like edge case enough where you'd be like, oh, that's fascinating.
I think it's a type of animal pelt that you wear.
Yeah. Well,
does that make you feel better, Gary?
My second guess was that it was like something in the Nordic pantheon that wasn't a god, like a place, like Emir or like a thing. Like Emir was the name of like the sword of... I don't know, Loki or something. Yeah. Loki's sword was Emir or something.
But tell us more.
What do you know about Emir?
I actually bumped into Emir because there is a technical product called Emir, and I'm like, what a weird name. So I Googled it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, Norse god makes sense for this or whatever.
Is it a company that is the company American?
Canadian. It's not, I mean, it's a company, it's a guy, it's a dude. I mean, his name is Emir, but the product's name is Emir.
Yeah.
And so it's a serverless thing, but I was fascinated. And as I do, I fell down the rabbit hole and then I was like, what the hell does it even mean? And then I Googled it and was really excited that it was not, I don't know. I was thinking like, it was going to be like something backwards or an acronym, but it was actually a thing. And
so what I'm is the sure god why, feel? Like, what's he in charge of?
Take us down the rabbit hole with you.
Take us down the rabbit hole with you.
I mean, basically, like, generally just mentioned in four poems and sucks at the utter of, I can't say it, O-wim-blah.
Cool.
I can't tell if that was you trying or you...
No, that was trying. A-U-O with, it's not an umlaut, but some other character over top. U-M-P... And at this point, Gary was never on the ranked topic again.
That's the character's official name, not an umlaut.
Yeah, not an umlaut. So he's only mentioned in four poems, so he doesn't have a lot of information about him. Is that the thing?
Basically, yeah. It's just like an edge case god.
That's it. I
have decided the name of my band, Edge Case God.
Edge Case God. Nice.
I'm actually going to write that down because I like that a lot. I don't have a band, but I feel like that phrase needs to be somewhere in my.
I have been.
You don't have a band yet, to be honest. You have enough instruments for a one-man situation.
That's so true.
I actually recorded some mandolin this past weekend and some French horn.
Like so together?
So
or yeah. Independently?
Well, I mean, not at the same time.
Right, obviously not at the same time.
Because it's only one.
I mean, I guess you, well, anyway.
Yeah.
But probably that counts, technically really. Possible to do a one-man band scenario with the mandolin and the French horn if you like. Position the French horn somewhere, mounted it on something.
But at what point do you change from just recording music to being a band or like a musician?
The moment other people listen
to record. I have opinions on this, shockingly.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yes. I feel like music really parallels like the dev world. There's like a huge imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's really easy to be like, oh, I'm a musician, but I only do like I know some people that are classically trained and I'm like, hey, let's play. And I'm like, here's some chords. And they're like, oh, I only read sheet music. Like okay, that's fantastic. If you gave me sheet music for my guitar, I'd be like, huh, all right. Sweet. Like I'll figure it out. I'll
just work on my crane.
Yeah, I'll just play. I'll figure it out. Okay. I mean, I'll catch the chord. And if it's a pretty standard progression, we'll get there. And if not, well, we'll pick another song. It's fine. But like if you handed me chord sheet for my French horn, I'd be like, I guess I'll figure it out. Cause I have to transpose and it, you know, it's just dumb. Like I'm not dumb, but I mean it's, you know, like I guess I have it like both sides. Like I read sheet music on sheet music instruments, and then on guitar I'd play by ear or chord sheets or whatever. So like I get both sides, but that like that heavy imposter syndrome. So I think people are like, well, I'm only sort of a musician. Like absolutely not. Like I think this is one of those clear things in life that is a binary thing. Like if you take joy in music in any meaningful way, right? Like you're a musician. Like you don't have to be the best in the world. You don't have to be like good, but like if you can get in there and like connect and like latch into that energy with other people that are making music, like that's it. That's the threshold. You're a musician. And so this past weekend I was with a friend that plays piano, and like I told her like, hey, you're gonna record. Like, I mean, cause I don't play piano because I'm not a musician, obviously. Right. So like sit down and like, you know, plug the keyboard in and get it all set up, headphones on, and, you know, play. And it was, there was that, like that barrier, like, well, I can't do this. Cause I'm not a recording musician. Like, okay, well, actually you are, because that's what we're doing right now. So like enough with the bullshit and let's just do it. And we did, and it was fantastic. And I mean, will these songs ever leave my computer? Probably not. Doesn't matter. Like the point wasn't the product. The point was the creation. Also, as a result of that, I read this book by, I forget the name. I'm glad I brought the topic today because I didn't bring anything.
I will interject while you're walking away from the computer.
Austin Kleon. Oh, go ahead.
No, fine. You can continue now that you've interjected into my interjection. That's fine. Continue.
Austin Kleon wrote this book about, it's like Great Artists Steal or something like that. Like is the name of the book.
Called How to Steal Like an Artist.
Thank you. It's a trilogy. So I've only read the first one. And the other two are sitting over there. And I mean, it's like a super short read, like an hour on the porch, maybe. But like, so I read it and
you're in a regular room,
but like 90 minutes somewhere else. But there was one of the chapters talked about like making it a habit, right? Like, and I, on my drive back from this music thing, like I started thinking about like the concept of fulfillment and why like stepping out of like the normal day to day and creating in an environment that's not like normal, like is so satisfying. So I just put on my schedule like every day this week for an hour, every morning from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. create. That's it. Like, So like, I don't answer email for work. I don't do anything else, but I mean, so far it's been at this desk because it's like miserable outside, but like some of that's been playing around with music. Some of it's been just writing, and I like, it doesn't matter if anyone sees the light of day, but having the, doing the work is important, I feel.
I've been, Aaron and I have come to the same conclusion, basically, like just to do the thing that we want to be doing and making time for it and just making it work. So we were, and I have been, while they've been gone, I've been writing for my D&D campaigns, plural, writing a crap ton for them, actually. And like ultimately I want to write more in various different ways. And so like, that's just one way of it's just one outlet that it's coming to. And like the end result of this writing is that I'm continuing this like zombie plague D&D story arc. And so I started like mapping on a timeline, like, okay, so after the stuff that they deal with right now, what is going to happen next? How is this zombie plague going to progress? And like, I'm just trying to think like the most, and like I basically had like windows of like, this could happen anytime between this time and this time, but like it gets bad real fast, yo. Zombie plagues are no shit. That's what I learned this week. Is that zombie plagues
are like shit. This is really like, it's a small chunk.
I was just thinking about like, I mean, essentially it's like taking the pandemic and like amplifying it, right? In terms of contagion. There's no cure. It's extremely contagious. Nobody knows that it's happening, and there's no form of communication, right? Because unlike now, there's like the internet, like, you know, in a pre-technology, in a pre-technology society, there is no internet. There's no like, and messages take a long time. And like the zombies could get there before the messenger gets there, or the zombie could be, or the messenger could be a zombie. So like it just, it's bad. It gets real bad, real fast. And like you offset that with like, okay, well there's magic exists. So like, surely there's like some defense, but there's not a spell that like, that'll like wipe out disease in like a huge group of people. Everything is contained to like a single individual. So it's sort of like individually inoculating like certain people. And like, if you're doing it that slow, that is bad. So stuff gets bad real fast. Kind of like, I'm trying to like
writing optimistic stories is what I'm
trying to think of, like what the end result is, like how, like, okay, where does this story end up? Because now I've started, now I'm in it, right? Like now I've started it and there's no turning back. So like, where's the end goal? And trying to figure out like ways that like the players could I don't know, like mass inoculate people or something. And I'm like thinking like beyond a divine intervention, I'm not, and like just straight up lockdown, like all the cities just lock down and then like send out people to kill all the zombies. Cause there's no, like, there's no curing them either is the other thing. Like once you've got it, you've got it. Like I made it real nasty. like besides like just locking down cities and like then sending people out there to go and like fight the zombies, and while every city is in lockdown, there's not like, there's no good alternatives.
I love that you've kind of boxed yourself into this corner of pessimism that like you're going, I mean, like you're going to have to get out of somehow, but like but it's gonna be hard.
Yeah, that's really, I don't know if like my head was in that place at the beginning and now I'm like at the end, I'm like, whoa, dude, what is your problem? there's no happy ending of a zombie story though. Other than everybody's dead. Everybody's not gonna die. I promise you that everybody's not going to die. But I'm like, it's that's what I've been writing about lately. I was going to talk about something earlier. I don't even remember what it was. Oh, Edge Case Gods. I was going to say that I've been also doing some research about Edge Case Gods.
I love that phrase.
Not
this album is amazing.
not Nordic gods though. I was what was it? There is also for D&D. There is a creature in Dungeons and Dragons called an Aboleth, which is like this ancient water-based thing that like communicates telepathically and like can take over people and like is like a big mental. So like in my campaign, my other campaign with the family, they had this object that was actually like sort of like a petrified Aboleth. Like it was a stone, but the Aboleth was inside the stone. And it was trying to get out. It was trying to like communicate and like take people over and whatever. And they gave it to this gold dragon who had been guarding the gold hoard of money that had been saved by the previous speaker of the city or whatever, that he had just like squirreled away, and he had this dragon guarding it basically. And so they gave it to him, and the Aboleth is like, or the stone, because they didn't know what to do with it. The stone is like, oh, here's a really powerful creature that I can just take over. And like, I rolled for it at the time. And like, yeah, the creature took, and so like my whole, like that plot line is all about like, okay, so now the Aboleth is out and is controlling this massively powerful creature. So like, he's going to come back around at the end at some point, but I was trying to think of like some really cool name to give him. And so the name that like I was thinking about was Shub Niggurath, because I basically know that name from death metal. Morbid Angel is what I know about Shub Niggurath. So I looked up Shub Niggurath, and I knew it was Lovecraftian. But the thing is, Lovecraft didn't know anything about it either. Like, Lovecraft only mentioned it like two or three times, and then other authors took that and made it into a thing. So I was trying to think of like, if it was something that would make sense. Like, I mean, I don't even care. It could be any Lovecraftian of other whatever old one. But Shub Niggurath sounded pretty cool. If I was going to name it a thing, like, sure, it's Shub Niggurath. It sounds really big and intimidating, and that's the name of the Aboleth. So I was down a Edgecase Gods rabbit hole this week as well. It was really weird that like H.P. Lovecraft. Like there's a whole lot of stuff that like he just didn't write, this other people wrote, or like he wrote for other people too. Like he wrote stuff, but then he like wrote other things for like just on other names, and like other people wrote for his stuff, and like that's just weird. Like, why is it all like this contained thing? I don't know. I never read Lovecraft.
Never. I mean, like I guess dabbled, but just
dabbled in Lovecraft.
Kind of like, yeah, dabbled in Lovecraft, just to get like basic references, but like it's not really my thing.
I've only Wikipedia'd H.P. Lovecraft. Like, I know I know what it is. Like, I know what the idea of Call of Cthulhu and like the concept, and but like my only direct interaction with it is the way that like the Watchmen sort of like uses that Lovecraftian cosmic horror in that book.
Yeah,
calling it a book, like that's my only dream. Yeah, like I've never actually.
It's good to know stuff like that for like the family tree. Like,
yeah.
The influences, I think, but.
Gary's furiously coding.
Yeah, what are you up to, Gary?
I.
Are you transcribing everything we're saying?
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm sorry. We got this. I'm sort of keeping an eyeball on some server loads right now because I have to. I don't really have to. I have to. I feel obligated to.
Mm-hmm. So musician. So you think that the act of musicking is what makes you a musician? Nothing about like performance or distribution or anything. It's just about.
No, God, no. No, I mean, like, is an artist not an artist until their art is like purchased? Like, no. Like,
no.
There's no commercial aspect that makes you an artist. And I'll lump music.
It might be an artist isn't an artist until their art is seen even by one other person. Like a musician isn't.
I don't think that's true though.
But that might be pushing it too far as well.
Like, well, so there's artists. I mean, does
like
it
Emily
matter
Dickinson if... didn't like give her poetry to anybody before she died, I don't think. But that doesn't make her not a poet.
Right. Like, does your art need to be seen in your life to make you an artist? No.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely not. I mean, music is kind of a little bit hard to hide because it's
loud.
It's now. Well, it's now. Like, you know, like even if it's a solo act, like it's sort of hard to contain the sound. Like a page has, you know, parameters, and your pen or pencil can't leave that, you know? It's not like you're like, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's like that can be a very private piece of art because you can contain it, you know? Music is a bit harder to contain, but even still, like, even if you're only playing and it's like only your family hears, you only play when like you're the only person home, whatever, you know, I still think that artistry, like that thing, you know, makes you a musician. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I
so I struggle with, and I say this having struggled with for a long time, feeling like not really a musician, because like initially, like I got into college on French horn, right? But I'm a college dropout. That's not a surprise. I think everybody knows that. And I, like, you know, on French horn, I mean, that was what I did. And at the end of the day, like I could read music and whatnot, but I mean, I was not like, and I sang in the a cappella choir in college and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I wasn't a musician because I wasn't doing commercial music, right? Was the thought in my head. And then I learned to play guitar. And even that, like learning to play guitar, like I'm not a great guitar player, whatever. It's fine. I really enjoy doing it. I have fun, especially playing with other people, you know, like there's something that clicks there. But that's also like, well, but it's not, you know, I'm not a musician. And then there was this like point where like I had that in my head. Isn't it? Like, as I say,
my school of music is a combination of punk rock and experimental music. So like my whole like approach to creating music is all about making shit up on the fly. That is my genre. Like no rules, no sheet music, no nothing. Just like make shit up, break shit, like make sounds that appeal to you at the time. That is my genre. So like having this level of like, well, I'm not a musician. I play 5, 15, 20 different instruments, and I can read sheet music and chord progressions and like all this, but I'm not a musician because, you know, thing that is just, it's like, okay, if you're not a musician because of that stuff, then what the hell am I? Because I'm just like pounding on the keyboard. I mean, like.
But that just goes to show how insidious kind of imposter syndrome or whatever it is, like our inner gremlins are, because you're doing yourself a disservice. And then by proxy, when you end up sharing it with people, they're like, oh shit, like this guy doesn't think he's a magician. Well, then I'm definitely not. Like,
and the thing is, well, the only thing that makes me think that I might be a musician is because I actually had feedback from another musician who I actually like quite a bit. And like, because he I've known him on Twitter for forever. And we chatted a number of times, and he produced one of my albums, remix album, and made some remixes for me. And he was like, yeah, like your stuff is really, really good. Like, it's raw, but it's really good. And like, that was like amazing feedback to get from somebody who like literally gets paid to make music and like has had his stuff on various TV shows and stuff, like, you know. And like, he made this amazing, sort of cinematic orchestral, version of one of my songs, which is like honestly like the most, like that is like, it's still my favorite thing in the world, because like it's something that I created, but it's like retooled in a different way to make it like something else and like beautiful and cinematic. And it just, yeah, it's
so, I will say that part of this for me was like one of my I would say my best friend, I've known for 20 years, right? Like graduated, you know, I mean, he's been a musician by any definition I've ever used in my life, right? No matter where it falls, the entire time. I mean, he picks up an instrument, he can play it. Like, you know, like he hears it and he's like, fiddles with the keyboard. He's like, oh yeah. And then suddenly like it's all there. You know, on everything. So there's like in the early days when I was playing with music, early days, you know, like in my 20s, what a weird episode this has become. playing with music, but not really playing music. Like, it was always just intimidating. Like, oh, I want to try and capture this sound, right? Like, and he could be like, oh yeah. And 15 seconds later it was there. Whereas like, I could see this hill that I'd have to climb to get to that point and figure out how to make that. And it was just so obviously I wasn't a musician because I couldn't do that, you know? Which I mean, also with like, I think mirrors a lot of the early part of my dev career, but also I think a lot of people's dev careers, because if you're, you can't help but compare. Like, you just, it's human nature, right? You'd be like, you look and you see what someone is doing, maybe perhaps achieving, right? And you can't help but compare. It's that sucks. Here's another take on it. So I was talking to a friend yesterday in, where does he live? Windsor. We were talking about, yeah.
Oh, okay. Just double checking.
Yeah. And he, we worked together at Tribe for a while, but he doesn't work there anymore. I don't either. When did he leave Tribe? Maybe he left like a year ago. I don't know, but we have these hangouts from time to time. And so, he's like doing this like entrepreneur path right now. And so he's really like doing the thing where it's like, that's a lonely track, you know, you don't have people to bounce your ideas off of and validate and like wrestle with and get, you know, move the ball forward. Like at the end of the day, you go, like, you look at like what's happened and you can solely base it on your efforts, successes for the day, you know, like that's it. You're the only one moving the yardstick. And so as a result of that, like, we had this conversation about, I don't remember what it was. We were just talking about that, those emotions and feelings. He mentioned this question that someone asked him one time, when he was kind of complaining. He said, someone asked me like, is it good to be Nick? And I thought about that, and I thought about that question, right? Like, is it good to be, and then say your name? Like, and so I felt silly doing it. But after this call with him yesterday, I said it out loud and like asked myself, felt absolutely ridiculous doing it. But like, but holy shit, it's cool. Cause like, if you step back and you get like, and then think about in the context of externalizing, like, well, am I a musician? Am I a programmer? Am I whatever label it is? God, this took a weird fucking turn today. But like externalizing that, like, you know, is it good to be Gary? Like, hell yeah. Like, that was really cool. That was the highlight of my yesterday. I'm glad we had this talk. Thanks, Amir.
And with that.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to close the show. Allison, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, you said you've only read the first Austin Kleon book?
I have, yeah. And it was because my friend Evan, who's like the super musician, handed it to me this weekend and said, I think you need to read this.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you like, I'm assuming you've read it?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of the many things that I feel like the people I know are immersed in is at some point, between like the yoga teacher, life coaches, pod of people. But it's super helpful because I think it breaks down a lot of core concepts that like prevent people from being creative or exploring certain aspects of things, and lets you like maybe adds an element of play back into it. Cause at some point we get old enough that like we forget to just do things because of how it feels, instead of like the outcome or the end results. We forget that like it's totally fine to suck at stuff. you know, it's just like, it's kind of all those like little core things that like, and then when you do them as an adult, you feel ridiculous, but you're also like, oh God, this feels great. Like, and the people I look up to the most are the people who are able to like harness that energy and like just go into that state of flow and just not care. And I'm like, oh yeah, more of that, please.
So state of flow, like this is a phrase I've heard a lot recently. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
I was gonna say, or you get to be an adult and you start doing a thing and you're like, oh, this is fun. How do I make money at this? Because that's the adult response.
The capitalist imperative. Yeah.
How do I make money doing this thing that I like doing? I'm like, well, maybe you don't. And maybe that should just be okay.
And it's that thing of like, you have to be passionate about what you make money at also, which is like not a true thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but it feels true.
I mean, like, it's lovely if that's the case.
Right.
But
but a job can be a job.
Yeah, a job can
be a job. Yeah, it's good to have from time to time. And I think, like, inherently, I think if you're finding balance elsewhere, like, I think sometimes you do find excitement, even if you're not overly excited about, like, the job. Like, there are times where you're like, oh, yeah, this actually is okay or good or even great. But it doesn't have to be.
Or you find meaning in what it allows you to do in your not job time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I think that's also really valuable depending on your situation. Yeah. Oh, but if you wanted to learn more about flow, there's I'm going to probably butcher the last name, but it's Mikhail Chikamsimensi. I can write it down for you. but he's like a positive psychologist. He wrote all about the state of flow, and it's basically like when the difficulty level is ideal and you lose yourself in the state of flow, because the difficulty level is just such that it's challenging, but not too challenging to frustrate you. And the enjoyment level is just such that you can like fully immerse yourself in it.
Well, that's fascinating. I didn't think about like challenge being a position in there.
Yeah, it's interesting because like oftentimes like, and I think of crossword puzzles for some reason, because I'm like a huge crossword puzzle fanatic. But like, if there's a crossword puzzle that's like challenging, but you can kind of like eke your way through it, I'll be entranced for like 3 hours. But if it's so difficult off the bat that I'm just like, no, forget it. Like, I'll just put it down. I just won't care.
that's me in Sudoku.
Yeah.
I feel like there are things then. So like art's one of those where the challenge level adjusts to your experience, like because you're always reaching for that next like breakthrough, right? Like it's constant. I would think like musically, like I look at where I was a year ago versus where I am now when I play, and the things that I think about when I'm playing are different because the things I thought about last year are now automatic or have become part of me. And so I'm listening or trying different things that are, that challenge level is like automatically dynamically adjustable.
If you had told me before 2020 that I would write 30,000 words in a month, I would have told you that you were nuts.
But look at you now.
That's literally what I did. And like, it's a D&D adventure, but that doesn't make it not 30,000 words.
Roughly. But see, like, so if someone goes like, hey, are you a writer? Would you say yes? And circle back to
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, it doesn't
feel. Oh, man. Chris,
I'm a TTRPG creator.
No.
No. That's no. Chris, you're definitely a writer.
You're a writer, man. Wow. I feel like we've had some breakthroughs today, y'all. joking aside, I certainly have.
I made a joke. I was talking to someone and they were just like, oh, are you in therapy right now? And I was just like, no, I do a podcast.
Same day.
It's this thing called Bin Jazz.
Bin Jazz. That should have been the topic. It's Bin Jazz. What is Bin Jazz?
I was trying to truncate the title in a cool way. It didn't
work. It's cool.
No, we made a horrible choice. Don't do it.
I like though that the title of the show finally made it into the show when you were talking about the binary of being a musician or a not musician. My mind was immediately like, binary, jazz.
That's true. I don't know. It's really like, fun. I don't, as an outsider friend, whatever, musician, writer, like you're all these things to me, like as the outsider. By outsider, I mean like the person that's not in your brain.
Kind of crowded in here recently.
You're welcome. You're welcome that I'm not in your brain. You guys, yeah, you're totally those things. So it's just kind of, it's always so baffling when I'm like, wait, you don't think you're a writer or you don't think you're a musician? Like how many, like, I mean, just the pure fact that you own so many instruments.
Yeah, right? Like how can you have that many instruments and not be a musician?
I respond like, well, yeah, but I started flute like 2 years ago and I never really got off the ground with it. Like,
there's this
whole list of failures, right? That's why is it so easier to look at that list than the other list?
But isn't a failure just a lesson? I don't understand.
I'm not very good lessons because I still can't play it.
I was in an experimental rock band in college, the last year in college, that sort of came out of these discussions that I was having with my friends about experimental music. And so we made a rule that anyone can be a loafman. We were the loafman. Anyone can be a loafman as long as they can make sound. So like, even if you are dead, you could still be a loafman because you could fall over. Like anyone that could make sound could be a loafman. All that was required was making sound. And that was like the fundamental crux of like the philosophy. And we swapped instruments and we like played in the stairwell of the basement stairwell and like did all sorts of crazy stuff and like made it performative even though nobody was watching. And like, it was ridiculous and stupid and also like really freaking amazing and like kind of fundamentally changed how I approached making music because it was like, well, if anything goes, you know?
Oh man. Yeah.
So like you could have instruments. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter @binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.